Welcome to the Drinking with the Saints podcast with Mike and Alexandra Foley,
where each week we mix a bartender's guide with the lives of the saints to help you celebrate the feasts of the calendar with liturgically correct cocktails.
Let's get started.
Welcome to the Drinking with the Saints podcast. I'm Mike Foley.
And I'm Alexandra Foley.
And a happy Advent and a happy Gaudete Sunday to you all.
Gaudete! The end is near.
Yay!
In a good way.
Yeah, exactly.
It's such a short Advent.
It is this year. It's crazy.
It's the shortest Advent you could have.
I believe so.
Right? Because Christmas falling on the Monday means it's the fourth Sunday and then Christmas the next day.
So prepare and prepare quickly.
Yes, I have not prepared quickly. I've been slow to kind of realize it was Advent, to be honest.
We have a wonderful podcast for you. We're going to talk about Gaudete Sunday and a lovely drink to have for it. We're going to talk about Gaudete and Advent, and we're going to do a quick and dirty overview of rum.
Rum. So that gives me a hint to what we're drinking. Please, my love, tell me, what are we drinking?
Well, first, let's do our customary toast. Stay with us, O Lord, for it is getting towards evening.
And bless our drinks and our conversation.
Amen.
Gaudete. Rejoice. Rejoice, I say.
And come, O come, Emmanuel.
Yay.
All right. So for Gaudete Sunday, we have a series of pink cocktail suggestions. And I think our favorite is from a 1934 cocktail book called The Bacardi Cocktail. We call it the Jubilee Cocktail because it just kind of is jubilant. And it has a beautiful pinkish rose color. Now, normally we use light rum, which is the standard cocktail rum to use, but we don't have any light rum with us, so we're going to do a Gosling's Black Seal rum.
Got to be honest, we've never made this drink with a dark rum.
Yeah.
I really like Gosling's, and it seems appropriate for the holidays, kind of a little spicy.
A little spicy. It's going to be a little more fulsome in flavor, probably a little sweeter because it's more of a molasses-based rum.
Yep. And the truth is we didn't have any white rum, but we're trying to save money for Christmas.
Exactly.
So we're using what we have. We encourage you to do the same.
And it may lose its pinkish rose hue. We'll find out. But anyway.
That's a good point. It's going to be brown.
If you could direct me, my love, I will get going.
Happily. All right. The Bacardi cocktail is 2 ounces of Bacardi rum, 1/2 ounce of grenadine, try to buy the real kind of grenadine.
And by real grenadine, my wife means grenadine that is made with real pomegranate.
Mm-hmm, which is a very Christmassy fruit.
Of course. And you just have to look on the label.
And then 1/2 ounce of lemon juice, freshly squeezed is best.
All right, and because it is opaque, we will shake 40 times.
40 times. My favorite sound. And you can garnish with a little slice of lemon. Cherry would be nice for Gaudete. That looks like a fulsome drink.
It does.
So, not complaining.
So the dark rum has given it a dark reddish flavor rather than the original pink.
It actually almost looks like a Bloody Mary. It's like a tomato red.
That is true.
All right, let's see how it tastes. Time to science.
Cheers, my love, to your health and holiness.
To rejoicing.
Indeed.
Together. I love it.
Not bad, not bad.
I gotta be honest, I think I prefer it to the Bacardi white rum.
Really?
I know, it's just got a complexity that I appreciate.
I can taste that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really like this, Mike.
Excellent.
Well done.
All right, Alexandra, tell me what you know about Advent.
Everything. Absolutely everything. I already mentioned the one thing I do know about this one is it's the shortest. Advent, it's kind of the waiting for the coming of Jesus from the Latin. Ad venere.
Yeah, pretty is that good. Right? To come.
To come, ad venere.
Ad venire.
That's pretty close.
That's right.
Venire, come. And
Adventus is coming.
Yeah, I think yeah. I was doing Italian there. Venere.
Yeah.
Venire, and then ad to.
Yeah, to come to.
To come to.
Wow, very nice.
So small.
Well done.
Thank
well
you very done. Much. Yeah.
So what coming are we preparing for?
The baby Jesus. Sweet baby Jesus.
Anything else?
Jesus in our heart.
Yes.
The coming of Jesus as a baby, the coming of Jesus into our heart. And there's a third one. I remember this because there's three different masses at Christmas.
Yes.
The coming of Jesus in salvation. Making stuff up now.
Well, you're kind of close.
So coming into our heart, coming into the manger, baby manger, and then coming as a redeemer.
At the end of...
Times! So it's the end times.
Exactly.
Okay, wow. That's so dark, Mike.
It's paradoxical.
That is. Yeah, it's birth and death all in one.
We quote-unquote prepare for the first coming of Jesus in his humility in Bethlehem. Even though he already came 2,000 years ago.
Right.
But we use the first coming to prepare for the second coming.
Mm-hmm.
So there is an eschatological note.
That's right.
To Advent, which is pretty cool. And as you mentioned, the three traditional Christmas masses, which have their own propers,
mm-hmm.
sort of highlight one of the three comings, even though they celebrate all three, but they privilege, each yeah. mass privileges one of the three comings.
Yeah, so every one of the masses... is all three at once, yeah. but it's like a different bird's eye view, view of it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I love that, like a hermeneutic, a focus.
Exactly.
A lens by which to look through something.
Oh, and I didn't mean or plan for this, but I can work in a plug for my latest book, Lost in Translation, Meditating on the Orations of the Traditional Roman Rite.
Funny how that worked out. I should get your little plug in there.
Well, the plug is this. If you want to know the key to the season... look at the collect for the Mass on December 24th in the Old Rite. It's the quote-unquote Vigil Mass, but a Vigil Mass in the Old Rite doesn't mean a Mass the night before.
Oh.
It means a penitential Mass, always in violet, even if it's during another season of the year, held the morning before a great feast. And the collect for December 24th has the key to the season. And I'll give you, even though the full and fulsome explanation is in the book, Lost
You're gonna
in
give
Translation.
Us not just a teaser, but a reveal.
I'm going to give you the short answer. In that collect, we pray that we may greet the second coming with the same sense of joy and security that we greet baby Jesus in the manger.
Like with the personal innocence. It's a sweet baby Jesus. It's all good. There's nothing threatening.
Yeah.
And that Jesus as your judge who comes at the second coming, that you have the same kind of like, it's all good.
Yeah. Just imagine being so spiritually well prepared
mm-hmm.
that when you see Christ come as the dread judge of the living and the dead, that you have the security of conscience to greet him with the same joy as if he were a baby in the manger.
It's a good reason to make sure you get
That's
to confession.
That's the goal, people. That's
get to
the
confession
goal.
In Advent.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
So that's kind of cool.
So you mentioned eschatological.
Yeah.
This is just a weird thing I've always wondered about.
You shouldn't use big words.
Well, no, I mean, it means end times, right?
Yeah, it means, yeah, the anticipating the end times. Yeah.
Okay. So here, this question, I'm going to surprise you with this question.
Uh-oh.
So when someone has scatological humor, it means someone who uses foul words or kind of dirty images. Is there a connection between the two words? Which I can't figure what that would be, but are those etymologically related?
I'm trying to think of all kinds of dirty double entendre rejoinders,
don't.
But I probably shouldn't.
You're just a half drink in, so it's too soon.
The answer is no.
No?
There's okay. a difference between scat and eschaton.
So scatological is like literally scat poop.
Yes.
I hate that word.
But you just used it on air.
Publicly. To make sure everyone, I think I learned the word scat when I moved to Texas. Yeah. Everyone uses the word scat.
Hey, way to put the scat in eschaton, Alexandra.
Only I could do that. Bring it low.
Only you would think of the end times as a load of beep.
For the record, I do not.
Okay.
Okay, so go on. What were you saying?
Well, I'd like us to pivot to Gaudete, which is commonly known as the Pink Sunday.
Okay. We have our pink wear we wear.
Exactly.
Pink clothing. We like to wear liturgically correct clothing.
But we need to start with a clarification. The liturgical color is not pink. It is technically rose.
Rose. That's right.
And there are two reasons why that's important to remember. Actually, three.
Okay.
The first is the most important. You don't tell a manly man priest to wear pink. He won't do it.
Saying, I know a guy who wears pink. I'm kind of fond of him.
You got to be, unless you're a preppy priest or a preppy guy like me, you don't have an objection to pink. Okay. But some folks do.
Right.
So you say, no, Father, it's not pink, it's rose. So that's reason number one to stick with rose. Number two is it ties into the origin of the custom.
Okay.
It starts with Laetare Sunday in Lent. And the tradition of the Pope giving a golden rose to privileged people like Catholic monarchs, Catholic queens. And then from there, Rose Sunday kind of bled into the liturgical color.
It's funny, you said a golden rose?
Yeah.
Like it's not even a pink rose, but go on.
Yeah, but everyone thinks, oh, my rose, I know the color.
Mm-hmm. But it's like literally made of gold.
Yes.
And you keep it forever on your mantle.
Yeah, so the Pope blesses it and then gives it to like a Catholic queen.
I'm going
to
wait until after the podcast to eBay golden rose.
Exactly. See how many Catholic queens are putting it on
eBay. Yeah, exactly. We're going to buy back the kingdom. All right.
The third reason is the most interesting. And this is what I wanted to talk to you about. So why rose? Rose is considered a lighter hue of violet.
That's right.
So again, the liturgical color of Advent and Lent is not purple, it is violet.
Okay.
Purple betokens royalty, but violet is penitential. Mm-hmm. It's not royal. It betokens a bruise.
Oh.
When you're black and blue, you're violet.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a real penitential color. It's like being beaten.
Right. Bruise for our redemption. Yeah.
Yep. And so violet is penitential, but then rose is this strange mixture of, I'm not drunk yet. I just don't like the word mixture.
I gave him some eyes. I gave him the Italian say, gli occhi. Did you just slur? It's too soon.
It's a kind of joy in the midst of penance.
Mm.
And that's what I wanted to talk to you about.
So, sorry, but so it's the color violet, but it's like watered down in a way?
Watered down or enriched?
So the liturgical color for Christmas is white.
Yes.
So it's a combination of white and violet, perhaps?
No.
Really close on that one?
No, it's still 100% in the bag for penance.
Mm-hmm.
But the rose suggests a lighter key of penance, joy in the midst of penance.
Can I interrupt this conversation to mention something our priest said that was really great?
Okay.
He was saying there's Sunday Mass for the fourth Sunday, not this coming Sunday, but the fourth Sunday of Advent. And then they'll have a Mass that day, but then they'll have the Vigil Mass for Christmas, like the midnight Mass. And also I think there's like a 5:30 Mass. And then Christmas Day masses. And he was saying, so it's very possible you'll go to church two times on Sunday. And of course, like most churches, there's several masses for Sunday. He said, let me just put it to you this way. If you see me, you should see me once in purple and once in white. If you come on Sunday, you go twice and you see me twice in purple, you've done it wrong. If you come and see me twice in white, you've got it wrong. That was so great. So funny.
That's so easy to remember.
Father Finch. Yeah. We love our priest, Father Finch. It was so good. It's like, I like that. Just color therapy.
Exactly.
I can understand colors, Father.
All right. So speaking of color therapy, what I find fascinating about the Roman Rite is its use of colors during the liturgical year to betoken certain kinds of attitudes, certain kinds of emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think other rites do this to the same extent that the Roman Rite does. I don't think the Byzantine Rite does it, the Armenian Rite does it. They too have different colors.
Yes, right.
But man, like there's no equivalent elsewhere in Christendom of this particular thing.
Hmm.
joy in the midst of penance. Mm-hmm. And what it suggests is mixed emotions.
Sure.
And I find
complicated feelings.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And
the Byzantines don't have a Gaudete or Laetare.
They do not.
Huh.
And what I find fascinating about that is that you can understand sort of the primary colors of emotions. But the Roman Rite takes it to an extra degree, mm-hmm. with this rare category of mixed emotions, mm-hmm. of joy in the midst of penance. And I tell you, one of the things I find fascinating about that is that it's quintessentially adult.
Mm-hmm.
I once read somewhere that children never cry for joy.
I was just thinking that, yeah.
Right?
Right. That you would cry and it's not an owie.
Yeah.
You're like, I'm so happy I'm crying.
Adults are funny. Mm-hmm. We can cry for joy. But then I guess the flip side of that coin is we can experience a certain kind of joy even in the midst of penance, even mm-hmm. in the midst of a certain kind of sorrow.
Mm-hmm. Oh, or like the other day I was in the tennis court and I got hit really hard and I laughed through it.
Okay, that's just mania.
Well, it was kind of like, you know, like I didn't want the person who hit me to feel bad. So I was like, oh, smiling. But like, I was like, oh, you know, like have a pure emotion. Don't do that. And I was like, I can't stop like kind of laughing through it. Huh. Anyway, so it's the flip side, but okay. I'm just crazy, evidently.
Well, I don't think there's a liturgical color for that.
Like there, I can't imagine a young kid doing that.
Yeah.
Anyway, moving on.
That's a good point. Well, that is my main point. I'm just, nothing more to say except that I'm fascinated by this category of mixed emotions, mm-hmm. that only adults seem to be capable of, and that it's somehow enshrined at least twice a year in the Roman Rite.
I like that. It's psychologically complex.
Yes.
It recognizes our psychological complex.
Itty.
Thank you. I was like, complexity. I like this drink.
She's drunk.
Complexity. Complexity.
Well, maybe it's like drunkenness itself when you're kind of both happy and sad at the same time when you're in your cups.
What? That means you have not drunk in the right way.
Oh, okay. I withdraw the statement.
Crying in your beer, Mike? That's a bad sign.
It is indeed.
Yes. I learned that from a talk you gave.
Indeed. All right. Good. Well, we solved the problem of mixed emotions. We have them, and we have them on a natural level, and we even have them on a supernatural level. I like it.
So tell me other customs besides drinking, Mike, for Gaudete.
None. So I'll tell you this. Laetare Sunday was instituted because of the Golden Rose. Laetare Sunday in Lent. But the other reason was that it came upon mid-Lent, mm-hmm. and it was just a little bit of the relaxation of the strenuousness of the season.
Right.
But Advent is not strenuous. It has no mandatory fast. Mm-hmm. It's a time of restraint, but it's still joyful. So it's not a relaxation because there's nothing that's, the bow isn't strung too tight to begin with. It's rather simply expressive of joy.
I think we've talked in the past about how Lent in some places, was it Lent that was in some places penitential and some places not, or was that Advent?
You were thinking of Advent. So Advent's okay. A funny mutt season.
Yeah. So for the French, it was
that's right.
Joyful, and the Romans,
no.
Other way, French were austere.
Well, this is the funny thing, because you think of the French as not being terribly
right.
austere.
Bon vivant.
But it was the Frankish liturgy.
Okay, not the Gauls.
So they were sort of the ancestors of the French.
Yeah, but so they're Germanic. The Franks come
right.
from Germany.
Wow, we're getting history lessons all over the place,
so
but you're right.
The Gallic people are like Ireland and France, and they probably were a little more good times. And then the Franks come from Germany, and we all know when you come from a cold climate, you're a little more austere in general.
Yeah. I don't know how austere the Gauls were. They were Celts, but the Celts can also be kind of, you know, they also play the sad card, like the Irish.
That's true. Yeah. But like the closer you get to the Mediterranean, the more kind of leisurely people are.
Yes.
Right?
All right. So let's set the history record straight.
Okay.
First, there were the Gauls, and then
in France,
Julius Caesar conquered them. They became a Roman province. Mm-hmm. And then the Roman Empire falls and the Franks, which are a Germanic tribe, move in. Mm-hmm. And that's where we get the word French. Mm-hmm. And initially, they were quite austere. So there was this tension in the Middle Ages. The Roman Rite, that is to say, the citizens of Rome, the residents of Rome, celebrated Advent with white vestments. And it was just joy, joy, joy. Mm-hmm. But then the Franks treated it as another Lent. And they're like, dour, penance, dour, penance, dour, penance, penance, penance. Mm-hmm. We'll suppress the Gloria as a sign of joy. They didn't suppress the Alleluia, but that's we'll right. suppress the Gloria. Mm-hmm. And we're going to wear violet vestments. Mm-hmm. And so eventually the two came together and the Roman Rite made a compromise. All right, we'll put on the violet vestments. We'll suppress the Gloria. But there's no mandatory fast.
Right.
So it's
the way
this
there is
mud.
With Lent.
Yeah. So all of Advent is a mixed emotion.
That's so true.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is not just what our as Catholics our experience now. Like yeah. you see your neighbor who's like, I'm having a cookie exchange or I'm having a party. And there's all kinds of fun things going on during Advent. And as Catholics, I think we kind of feel like, can you wait until the 12 days of Christmas?
Yeah,
like it's tough to be a traditional kind of minded Catholic yeah. during Advent. You're like, we're about to go to a faculty Christmas party.
We are.
And you're like,
and we're going to get lit because the great text program at Baylor University is off the hook.
You know, of course we're going to go. We're not like, well, we're not going unless it's an Advent party.
Exactly.
We're only going to have Advent hymns and everyone's going to wear purple.
Exactly.
That would be a really fun party though.
That's right.
But yeah, so it's a mixed emotion. Yes, yeah. It's hard.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow, we're solving so many problems tonight.
Are we?
Yeah.
I'm not really seeing that.
All right. We're going to pivot to rum.
Aroma?
Rum.
A rum.
From Roma to rum.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Nicely done.
Thank you.
I see what you did there.
From Roma to rum?
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
Again, really liking this drink. I love the Gosling's rum.
Actually, there is a
Black
connection. When Republican President McKinley ran for office, he demonized the Democratic Party as being the party of Rome and rum.
And what's so wrong with that? Suddenly I'm a Democrat.
Yeah.
That's so now interesting.
Now it seems to the Republican Party is more Rome and rum. But anyway. So we are having rum, and we've never done an overview of rum with our listeners before.
All right, teach me.
It's not part of the golden age of the new golden age of cocktails.
It's true. Yeah.
It was hugely important at certain points in history.
For the American founding.
I think it had its latest cocktail iteration in the 70s, which is not a golden age of cocktails.
But it was a golden age of really kicking back and getting loaded.
Indeed.
I am not approving of that.
All right, so here's a contest we should probably have. Right. I don't know if it's a good contest to have, but what is the hard liquor with the darkest and most checkered history? Because, you know, we love, as drinkers with the saints, as saintly sippers.
Like a dark history.
But, you know.
Like complicated, like slavery.
Well, like, for example, gin is a very fine liquor.
Sure.
But when it was introduced to London in the 17th century,
right.
it had the effect of
minds.
Crack cocaine yeah. on the slums. Mm-hmm. And apparently it was like really, really bad.
Right. Like men leaving their families just so they could just have their hard liquor.
Exactly. Yeah. So,
and that would be the only option for hard liquor, I imagine.
I think so. Mm-hmm. So gin had a checkered history. You could argue that whiskeys had a checkered history, especially among the Irish.
Mm-hmm.
But rum is associated with some of the worst developments of the New World. It is associated with Pirates of the Caribbean.
Sure.
And that's not just a ride at Disney, although it's no longer a ride at Disney.
I know, we're like, pirates are so fun! Yeah, like, no, they were terrible, and they still are.
Exactly. So it was associated with piracy.
Mm-hmm.
It was associated with the slave trade.
Slave trade,
yeah.
For sure.
The triangular trade. Right. Yeah. So one of the fascinating things is rum could have never come into being were it not for the New World and the availability of cheap sugarcane plantations. So the Old World knew of sugar, but it was super rare and only like the royalty could ever afford them. Mm-hmm. And then the New World is discovered, slavery is implemented, and suddenly cheap sugar is available the world around. Mm-hmm. And with the sugar and the molasses comes the rum. To this day, rum has to be made with 51% sugarcane in order to be
considered
called
rum.
Huh. Yeah.
Alexander Hamilton. And yeah. I have not seen Hamilton, so I don't know if it's in that musical.
Yeah.
But wasn't he from a sugar plantation?
Yeah.
And like their
so it started in Barbados.
Was, right. Yeah. Barbados is where I think he was actually from.
But one of the greatest producers of rum was actually New England before the American Revolutionary War. And
really?
it was produced largely as a currency for the slave trade.
So you would trade slave for rum?
Or
sugar.
They were part of this triangulation. They didn't have slaves themselves, mm-hmm. but rum was such a currency that in Rhode Island, mm-hmm. it was considered a legal currency along with gold.
Rum was. Wow. I was just in Rhode Island 2 weeks ago and didn't see any rum.
They would make the rum solely for the slave trade.
That's so interesting. There's a way in which, of course, the North, the Northeast especially, just thinks that their hands are so clean when it comes to slavery.
Yep.
Like, but the dirty little secret is that they were producing rum.
They were like the money launderers.
Wow.
Yeah. And now they tisk the South.
Sure.
For its as legacy. And, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But still.
But still, like, you were also complicit. You also had your industry.
Wow. I didn't mean for this podcast to go woke, but yeah, all our hands
think it's
are
woke,
dirty.
It's truth.
Yeah. But it's not the 1619 project. I just want to clarify.
Understand that.
But it is fascinating. Rum has been associated with some really dark chapters mm-hmm. in world history.
Yeah, I think
But it tastes great.
We're really promoting this drink, everyone. Yes, and now we can drink it without scruples.
Sure, why not? Can I show some other?
I feel like this is so off topic, but it seems like now you can drink rum without any qualms, whereas you can't drive an electric car because the way that all the battery, the lithium for the batteries and the things that they need for the batteries are mined in China, and it's like child labor and it's totally horrible. And same thing with cell phones. I mean, the things that we all carry around in our pocket are all probably more complicit in the depredating of human dignity than rum is, and I don't know where I'm going with this.
All I know is that you're just bringing me down.
Sorry.
Like, I'm experiencing mixed emotions right now.
So sorry, but it's true. I mean,
yeah,
we should all be aware of the fact that the things that we rely on some pretty sketchy things. Okay.
Wow.
Moving on.
This dark rum has had an effect. Darkened Alexandra's
dark.
emotions. All right. So I'll try to bring the conversation up if I can.
Please do.
Rum is tasty. Mm-hmm. And there are different grades of rum. So okay. We already talked about light rum as the standard for a cocktail. Dark rum, richer, more molasses-based, is usually used in mixed drinks rather than cocktails. So like a rum and Coke would be a dark rum and a Coke.
A mixed drink is two ingredients?
Usually,
a
yeah.
A cocktail is usually three?
That's right.
Yeah. I know my dad actually just likes to sip rum.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dark rum is also good for a dark and stormy, which is one of your dad's favorite drinks as well.
It's true.
There's also gold rum, flavored rum.
Hmm.
An interesting category is
Malibu, coconut rum. We drank that in college.
No, yuck.
Oh my
gosh. Stop.
It's really good. I don't know if I can have it now.
Overproofed rum.
Oh, I saw that on our liquor cabinet.
151 proof rum.
Yeah, I got drunk looking at it.
It is used for flaming cocktails, which just means that you set it on fire. Means nothing else than that. Alexander's giving me a very red-faced
laugh. I'm giving the yucky again. It's really hot in here. It's 50 degrees outside, but it's 104 in here.
So, for example, on New Year's Eve, we have Feuer Abendsbowle or something of that nature.
You can't remember the name of it?
No, it's because I don't know German.
Fire, I was going to say Feuer Abend, that's different. No, Glöbenschlein.
No, that Glühwein.
Glühwein is
the
of.
German mulled wine during Advent. But there's Feuer Bowl, Feuer in Bowle. And what you do is it's a mulled wine, but you get a sugar cone. And then you immerse it in 151 proof rum.
Mm-hmm.
And then you set it on fire. And it melts the sugar. The sugar drops into the bowl. Yeah. And it's really a delicious Christmas bowl.
I spaced out for a second because I was maybe Googling the name. But
Feuer
did you mention?
Sagenbowle.
Feuer Sagenbowle.
Feuer Sagenbowle.
Brings back the Jersey memories.
Yeah.
So you mentioned you have like a little metal bridge that goes across the bowl. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you soak it in this overproofed rum, set it on fire, and then everyone is standing around waiting for their drink while this thing melts down. Yeah. It's really fun. It's exciting.
It's really fun. So one of my funniest memories of researching drinking with the saints is that I watched a video by this famous German chef, and he was describing his childhood memories of Feuer Sagenbowle and how wonderful it is. And he was just waxing on sentimental. Und sie smells, und die flavor is wonderful. But make sure you use metal bowl.
Not glass.
If you use glass, it will break. Und you will burn, und you will die. It was like, it's so German.
Yeah.
Like, oh, she smells and that and that.
Wonderful.
But you don't follow rules. You will die.
I also remember him saying, "Und don't wear hairspray. You will be part of flame."
You pivoted to Russian, I think.
Yes,
but
I did. Right? Yeah, they're kind of close. Yeah. I got to work on my German accent.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So anyway, Advent is good.
Oh, thanks.
Gaudete is good.
It's even better.
Rum is very good, despite its checkered history.
Yes, yes. Oh, you're bringing me down again.
Yeah.
All right, so we're going to rejoice.
We're going to rejoice.
I say, rejoice.
Exactly. Our final note is to invite you all on our super awesome pilgrimage cruise to Croatia.
I mean, are you looking for a last minute gift for grandma or for your parents or for yourself, your spouse, your friends? I'm not sure if anyone's that good a friend with anybody. But you can come on our wonderful cruise through Croatia, the Adriatic. It's a luxury yacht. It's going to be so fun. It's just 30 people and we've got a few spots left. And you know what? You can even just give, like if grandma wants to go, you just give her a donation towards it. Or if you want to go, you can ask grandma for a donation towards it.
Yes.
Micro gifting to yourself.
I love it.
Come with us.
It's a great idea.
Yeah. It's an elite group.
Absolutely.
And we're going to have a lot of fun. A
lot of rum.
A lot of rum and fun.
Exactly.
And beaches and hiking and mass every day. It's going to be amazing.
I love it.
All right.
All right, Saintly Sippers, thank you for listening. Have a blessed Advent, a blessed Gaudete, and a Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Thank you for joining us. Please get in touch with us via email at podcast@drinkingwiththesaints.com.
Or on our Instagram page at Drinking Saints. And find Drinking with the Saints book series at drinkingwiththesaints.com or wherever fine books are sold.
The Drinking with the Saints podcast is produced by Back Row Media.